What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to a live edition of the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, how are we doing today?
Boy, oh boy, do I love Nets content.
Yes, and we're dropping a lot. You know, yesterday we dropped the draft recap pod. Today we got a live rumor pod. Later in the week, we'll drop a free agency preview. So plenty of Nets content, plenty of Nets rumors.
Always, mate. And it seems to me the Nets are the talk of the town.
Exactly, and that's what we love to hear. And if you want to check out any of the previous shows, like we mentioned, that draft recap pod with Dalton Penns, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, Dash Radio, Google Play, and YouTube, pretty much everywhere. But Jack, what do you want to get into first today in terms of the latest Nets rumors? There's one big one. I think that's what you're going to pick.
The Slim Reaper.
Yes, the Slim Reaper. KD, rumors came out, or reports from Brian Windhorst and Kendrick Perkins on the jump. The Nets are now the front runners for Kevin Durant. Obviously, Perkins' source is probably Kevin Durant or someone close to him. So pretty exciting stuff. Considered what most people would say was a long shot at the beginning of the year, now the front runner for Kevin Durant. Seems crazy. Doesn't seem like it's real life.
Yeah, Brian Windhorst also said that he's not the only person that has heard that as well. So it's not just sources. You know, obviously, Brian Windhorst has his sources, obviously, within teams and such, agents and the like. So there is growing speculation, and it's positive for the Nets. Obviously, there's a lot of people who are a little bit 50-50 on the acquisition, obviously, with Kevin Durant being out for a large portion, if not all of next season with the Achilles injury. But, you know, one of the top 10, top 15 players of all time, you can get him on your team, you do it. And I mean, there's obviously rumors surrounding Tobias Harris that we'll talk about too, and the like. But Kevin Durant, one of the best players, I said on this pod probably just a week or so ago, he is the best player in the game. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard probably is right now, that he's the only, by default, the healthy one. But Kevin Durant is a bona fide stud superstar, and pairing him with Kyrie Irving would be the best scenario and probably the best result we can hope for.
It'd be one of the best off seasons for any team to have, you know, in the last couple of years. Obviously, the Lakers got LeBron, but you're not only getting the arguably the best player in the game, but you're getting Kyrie Irving, top 10, top 15 player too. And, you know, KD, I get it. People will be scared. You know, he's coming off a torn Achilles, but I do have a lot of confidence in the Nets performance team. And then also Kevin Durant's, you know, will to be great. You know, like you mentioned, he's all-time great. Just being on the Nets, him and Kyrie is changing the perception of the franchise moving forward. And it's a long-term change. It's not like, hey, you know, this is only going to help the Nets short-term. When you have two players like that on your team is viewed differently for the next 10 years.
Yeah, it literally changes the trajectory, the perception of a franchise. In a city where the New York Knicks have a massive stranglehold, you get two of the best players in the game, two of the top free agents. You mentioned, Nick, the fact that it would be one of the best off seasons for any team. The only way that it could get better would be Kyrie and Kawhi, essentially. You know, if you and I mean, you can certainly make an argument that Kevin Durant, if he comes back, you know, he's probably one of the best suited to come back from an Achilles injury out of all the guys to have suffered him, given his age, given his stature, given his health, and all the things surrounding that. But I'm really, really excited about these rumors. Obviously, we've still got, you know, seven, eight days to go. Luckily, it's our school holidays back down here for us, so I can consume all the content, but. Do we want to address a few questions? We already got some ones bumping in the chat.
Yeah, just a quick thought on KD. And not only you mentioned just KD's personality being a great fit coming back, I think his skill set, you know, he doesn't depend highly on athleticism. It's just the skills he has as a seven-footer, the ball handling, the passing, and obviously an elite shooter, probably one of the best shooters at that size. You know, the only guy that comes to mind is Dirk. So I think I'm pretty confident KD can come back really well, but let's jump into some questions.
So Ada SL has one. How do you guys feel about KD and Kyrie on the Nets?
Well, I mean, I'm excited. You know, I'm sure people have some negative approaches about it. There's nothing that you can really tell me that would make me upset about it. Just getting two elite players like that. Obviously, there's going to be a waiting period for Kevin Durant. You know, most likely we won't see him next season. There's a slim chance, you know, slim reaper, slim chance that we see him possibly late in the season or in the playoffs. Maybe we get lucky. If not, you know, you add one superstar and then the next year you're guaranteed to add another superstar. It's like you take one step forward and then you're taking another step forward guaranteed the next year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily 100% confident that all of this is going to happen just yet, because in the matter of days, like last week, I was speaking about how confident I was of Kevin Durant being a New York Knicks. So, you know, things can change on a whim. So, I mean, hypothetically feeling about KD and Kyrie on the Nets, it would be, you know, nigh on a dream come true for a guy who's, you know, followed the Nets for you know, about 5, 6, 7 years and hasn't had much success, obviously, hasn't been able to support many sort of superstars and studs. We've had our sort of Deron Williams. We've had, Brook Lopez, a fan favorite. But to get one of the best players of a generation and one of the most talented, sizzling, most marketable players of a generation. Obviously, I've made my thoughts known about Kyrie off the court, but he's hanging out in Japan. He's having a bit of fun. He's spending some time at Central Park. So for now, he's doing his thing, and I respect that. But it would be, one of the best, like you mentioned, one of the best off seasons ever. And I mean, Nets fans, it would sell out Barclays nonstop. The merchandising opportunities would be insane. The ticket sales would go through the roof. The season ticket sales would be insane. And Barclays and Brooklyn would be pumping.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it's not guaranteed yet. We're hoping it does happen, obviously. But the impact in marketing and just the impact on the Nets, feel around the world, like they're becoming must-watch basketball because there's two of the top 15 players in the league on the same team. Like you mentioned, Barclays selling out every night, being in New York. The Nets would make a strong push into kind of trying to take over New York. It's not going to happen in one season, but if they were to win championships down the line, that'd be something that they possibly could do. So it's huge on all fronts, short-term, long-term, on the court, off the court, money-wise, like whatever you want to look at it, there's just so many positives that come with it.
Selfishly, also, I think it could make the Brooklyn Buzz even more popular than it is. And for those that have stuck around since the early days, it provides just so many opportunities for Brooklyn supporters, Brooklyn podcasters, and the like. It just gives you a whole new allure because this is a star-driven league. And the Nets have had their sort of stars, quote-unquote, obviously that Billy King trade and the like, and Deron Williams, Joe Johnson. D'Angelo Russell has turned into a star, Caris LeVert. But we're talking about here some of the best, championship winners, MVP-caliber players, all NBA-caliber players. The likes of which the Brooklyn Nets have never had. It really just changes the entire trajectory of a franchise. But if you had any more thoughts, Nick, we still got a couple more questions.
Yeah, jump in the questions. I want to hear the fans and listeners.
So on Twitter, the popular NBDY, the popular nobody, why are so many leaks coming out regarding the Nets when they have operated in a stealthy manner since they came in? Also, is Kyrie really pushing this team to another level? So I guess we'll address that first one relating to the so-called leaks.
I do think the leaks are interesting. We kind of talked about it a little bit earlier. It seems like there's been more leaks since that point. One thing that stuck out was there was a leak on draft night that the Nets were trying to move the 31 pick, which is like, it just doesn't seem like that would happen right away. I mean, I guess other teams leaking. So it could just be other teams leaking information about the Nets and then agents and whatnot. I mean, I don't think you're going to get much pushback if someone says, hey, the Nets have interest in Kevin Durant or the Nets have interest in Kyrie Irving or Kawhi Leonard. Like, every team has interest in them. So I think some of the leaks are kind of planned, but there might be a leak in the Nets that we don't know about. I heard someone say it's Jared Dudley, but I don't think he knows, I don't think he knows that type of information, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of, when it comes from guys like Pooch, when it comes from guys like Brian Lewis, Nets beat writers, guys that are really plugged into what's happening into the behind the scenes of the Brooklyn Nets, you sort of know that there's relationships there within the franchise with those sort of guys. Pooch is known to be quite close with the players and some of the younger guys, whereas Brian Lewis obviously is a longtime beat writer. So when that's sort of happening, when we sort of see, the Kyrie Irving sort of thing, they want to change tack. There's speculation on whether the Nets want to just go for Kyrie without a second free agent. I take that and with some real sort of credence in comparison to some random burner accounts on Twitter or Stephen A. Smith, is these guys are plugged into what happens into the Brooklyn Nets. And yes, I guess that to an extent it can be frustrating. But for me, we were speaking about last season and have probably spoken about for 2 years with the Brooklyn Buzz, how frustrating it can be as sort of Nets reporters, quote unquote, that we don't get to speak about things that are leaking or injury sort of stuff. So, I mean, it's just you take it what you want with a grain of salt. So, I mean, I think the leaks aren't necessarily harmful. There can be a version of leaks. Leaks seems to have a negative connotation to it, but it gives the fans a better perspective of what's sort of happening. So, I mean, for us, it just allows us to produce some more content. So, I mean, I'm not hating it. I'm just hoping it doesn't necessarily fracture the organization, which I don't think it does.
Yeah, I don't think it does, unless you're getting leaks on like negative side, which really hasn't happened, and just more pessimistic type stuff. And you mentioned Lewis and Pooch. Obviously, the Nets know who those guys are, and they could be leaking to those two specifically because of, they know the relationship with the fans and how it's going to be perceived and kind of getting a feel for what's out there. So, I mean, it's an interesting thing, and I'm sure we'll discuss it more, especially if a lot of things come true.
Yeah, we've got two Kyrie questions. Obviously, the second part of the popular nobody on Twitter's question, and also the homie Jorge, he's going to heat host. How do you feel about bringing Kyrie Irving aboard? So I guess we'll change tack and speak a little bit about Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm more on the positive and optimistic side with Kyrie because I think I look at it from more of an objective perception where, hey, I'm not emotionally into tied to D'Angelo Russell as much, and Kyrie's a better player. Like, I know Kyrie's a better player. I don't even know if D'Angelo Russell ever gets to the level Kyrie Irving's at. You know, I think we'd agree that he's a top 3 point guard. And if you want to make an argument, the lowest you're really putting him is top 5. And he has that superstar ability to take over a game and really take over a quarter. And when, you know, we've seen D'Angelo do it, but we've also seen Kyrie do it on the big stage and against some of the best with teams keyed on him. You know, we've seen him in the finals with Klay Thompson locked up on him, and he's had gone to work on him for 4 straight games and coming back from a 3-1 deficit in the finals. So I feel good about Kyrie. Obviously, there's some scare with the locker room and the chemistry and all that, but I think the Nets have a real confidence in their culture, and not from just the front office, but for the coaching staff and the other players around, that things will be able to stay positive. And a lot of the negative stuff you saw about Kyrie, it was a connection to his relationship with, you know, Brad Stevens, Danny Ainge, and possibly some of the other players. So the Nets probably feel confident they can have a better relationship with Kyrie, and they've been so player-centric.
And it seems to be the city of Boston as well. Jackie McMullen on a recent pod sort of said that he was getting tired of actually living in Boston. And I mean, as a city, I'm not going to make any sort of – I've never been to Boston. I hear it's a lovely city. But for a lot of guys, you know, it hasn't been a free agency destination as much as they want to say. And I think Kyrie wants to live in New York. It seems to me that is very likely in some way or another. And, you know, when you're living in a place where you love, it changes everything. Where you love where you work, you love where you live, it's certainly going to help things. Hopefully – now, this year's postseason was more of an aberration because, you know, I know that there's a lot of people talking about, you know, Kyrie Irving by himself, can he lead an organization? I certainly don't think he can lead you to significant postseason success. But maybe last year was a sort of turning point and a real sort of learning moment for him. But Bobby Marks on his pod, Nick, we were sort of chatting about a little bit in the DMs over the last few days, brought up the fact, and I'll pose this question to you. Is Kyrie Irving just Deron Williams 2.0?
I don't think so. I mean, I heard that too, and it just seems like Deron Williams just was really like, I'm not going to say Kyrie's not a head case because there's question marks about what he said off the court, but like Deron Williams, like whole attitude, it was a lack of confidence where I think Kyrie, if anything, you want to say he's overconfident, where Deron Williams, like he lost his confidence. He had all those injuries and just things went really sour, and then he just wanted out and then he ended up staying. I don't think so. I mean, like they're fair case to make the argument, but you know, Deron Williams never necessarily played amazing basketball in Brooklyn. His, you know, one season when he was with New Jersey Nets, it was good. Then with the Brooklyn Nets, he had a good half a year. And then after they got the KG and Pierce thing, they surrounded him with talent and he was really bad. Like he had 0 points in a playoff game. They wanted him to be the best player. Pierce was calling for him to be a dark horse MVP. And Pierce and Garnett said, hey, you know, Deron just didn't want it. Like he didn't want to be the leader. He didn't want to be the lion. We know Kyrie, if anything, it's the opposite for him. He's just a little overconfident, and he wants to have those big moments, and he's already had those big moments.
Yeah, we got Ray Amarante, obviously, on Team Kyrie as well. So he says, sorry, Kyrie is a 6-time All-Star, all NBA second team behind Curry. D'Lo was only an All-Star due to Victor Oladipo getting hurt. Facts are facts. I mean, it's a really sort of hard thing to compare D'Angelo Russell and Kyrie Irving, but I guess that's sort of a tack we need to take. And I think the major question that I got from that same podcast, and there was a lot of discussion, and it's nice to hear some, you know, broad media speaking about the Brooklyn Nets, because it makes you think about it a little more when these, you know, sort of experts are talking about it. Is D'Lo worth the extra $6-8 million that comes with the extra baggage that we sort of spoke about off the court, possible chemistry issues, and that sort of thing? Obviously, you know, we've seen these little things come out where Kyrie, like, went to Brad Stevens is like, what does the word government mean to you? And I'm just like, oh, I hope he doesn't do that to Kenny.
I'd be interested to see what Kenny would say.
Well, like, I think he said the, I think he said the like, same thing.
Like what, Brad, but it's a conversation.
I honestly think he would say the same thing as what Brad Stevens said.
Yeah.
Where he just deflected. He's like, what does it mean to you? And I'm just like, because obviously a lot of people think, and I can't remember who it was that said it. They're sort of calling, you know, no, it was Chris Mannix, obviously a known Celtics beat writer, who calls Kenny Atkinson and the Brooklyn Nets Boston Celtics slight. But that dude is clearly just salty. But I interrupted you, Nick. What were your thoughts on the sort of comparisons?
Yeah, and I mean, it's just I just think like it's just a lot of comparisons, and you know, there's obviously some questions, and then obviously it's 6 million more. But like we talked about on prior shows, like Kyrie gives you just a little bit more pop as a team, and makes you more attractive for free agents. It also makes you more attractive in trades. Like if there's a big star who demands a trade, hey, the Nets are almost a guarantee to be on that list now because they already have one of these top 15, top 10 players in the league. That just makes you a bigger draw. So, and I talked about it. I think if you can upgrade, you upgrade. And, you know, people are like, oh, but they need a power forward. But like we talked about, the way you get yourself in trouble is when you overpay for players that don't deserve the money. So if you need a power forward and you're maxing out Tobias Harris and you know he's not a max player, now you're in trouble because no one's going to take that contract. Like hypothetically, if they had to trade Kyrie down the line, his contract is movable, or they ended up re-signing D'Angelo and signing Kyrie, one of those contracts is movable. So I'm all for Kyrie, and I think it's worth the $6 million. I've already fully pretty much bought in, as you know.
Yeah, I know you're 100% in. I'm pretty in. I'm hesitantly in. I'm dipping my feet in the water. It's a little bit cold right now, but I'll warm up.
as soon as we get to a Kyrie Irving jersey.
but then he'll probably leave like D'Angelo has. All three of my t-shirt jerseys. I'm going to keep bringing that up. Zach Lowe also posed the thought more on D'Angelo Russell. In terms of like his ceiling, and he was sort of like, did D'Lo like get better last season, or did he just make more floaters? That was literally a quote from him.
He's been saying that for a while too.
And I mean, I get it to an extent because D'Angelo doesn't have as versatile and as well-rounded as an offensive game as a guy like Kyrie Irving does. He's proven over, you know, seasons and seasons that he has a bag of tricks. And we've seen it this season that D'Angelo has a bag of tricks. Obviously, when he is given full rein into the offense, and he's the number one sort of guy, you know, he can hit floaters left, right, and center. He's outside and mid-range game is sensational. Obviously, Kyrie Irving is much more adept around the rim, whereas Kyrie Irving can do all those three other things that D'Angelo can sort of do. I think D'Angelo might have a little bit better of a floater, and D'Angelo is a better passer. But Kyrie did improve a little bit on that end. I would say Kyrie Irving is a slightly better defender, and in the right defensive scheme, which Boston certainly have, but in Brooklyn, obviously, our defensive schemes with the zone and such, I don't know how that benefits Kyrie. And obviously, we would need to get some pieces around him. But James of Flatbush thinks D'Lo still has a higher ceiling. What do you think?
I think with D'Angelo's like ceiling, I mean, I will just to touch on that point, I think both things could be true. Did he make more shots? Yep. Yes, but that's because he got better. Like, you work on making shots more. You hit contested shots when you're practicing. You see what he does in the offseason. He doesn't work on, you know, just standing still, catch and shoot. So I think both can be true. He can definitely get better. But I don't know. Like, can D'Angelo Russell be a top three point guard in the NBA? I don't know. It just doesn't necessarily seem like it's going to happen. The efficiency is the scariest thing. Like, we know he can put up stats. We know he can put up this. But can he shoot a good percentage from the field? Can he shoot a better percentage from three? And then, obviously, we've discussed this a lot. And this is kind of the biggest unknown. Like, is he going to be able to add enough muscle, add to his athletic ability a little bit so he can finish inside and get to the free throw line? And that's a major difference for Kyrie. Like you mentioned, he can get to the rim. He doesn't necessarily play above the rim, but under the rim, he's one of the best driving scorers in the league. So it's just like, I'm not sure. I don't necessarily think D'Angelo Russell's ceiling is higher than what Kyrie Irving's at. If anything, it's where Kyrie
Irving's yeah, I think at. That's like, a good point.
Being the best point guard. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that it's probably at the same sort of point, like you sort of mentioning. I think it probably scrapes where D'Angelo Russell's ceiling is probably maybe a little bit under where Kyrie Irving is. That's just a personal sort of viewpoint, because we've seen what Kyrie can do for, you know, an extended period of time, whereas we've seen flashes and then a full season of it from D'Angelo Russell. So, I mean, it's just one sort of thing that sort of makes you think about what would D'Angelo Russell do. And I think for D'Angelo Russell, situation is incredibly important. So were he to go to Minnesota, Los Angeles, Phoenix, which is less likely now with their sort of cap situation, those obviously are the two sort of main front runners outside of the Brooklyn Nets right now. Will he thrive as much? And I think he probably would. Obviously, with Minnesota, with a pick and roll guy like Karl Anthony Towns, that would be absolutely sensational. And Minnesota would probably become my second favorite team. And then obviously, you talk about the Los Angeles Lakers, they're never going to be my second favorite team. But they have my second favorite player in LeBron James. I see that as unlikely. And I mean, if you're going to throw a massive offer sheet. But D'Angelo Russell seems to have expressed sort of interest in heading back there. So, I mean, we can have a general D'Angelo Russell sort of talk, Nick, because there's plenty of stuff around him. And I know that we have a lot of crazy D'Angelo Russell fans, crazy in a good way, because I'm a crazy D'Angelo Russell fan myself. But where do you see his situation? Obviously, every time I see him posting something on Instagram with his dogs, I'm just like, oh my God, I love this guy. His heart is so pure.
He does post a lot of dog Instagram snaps.
I love it. Yeah, he was practicing at the Brooklyn Nets training facility with his dog. Like, how can you not love him?
Yes, I mean, that's really cool. And then you see him working on his game. I mean, I'm not going to say he looks bad. And if the Nets ended up re-signing him, I wouldn't be disappointed. Like, I think he's going to be a good player. I just don't know if he's going to get to that level. And in terms of locations he could go, I think there's a big list. Like, he's a really interesting player, especially for a team that doesn't necessarily attract the top stars. Like, you're not attracting a superstar. You invest in this young guy that's an all-star level player. Hey, you know, he could turn into get to another level or take your team to another level. Or if you just can't attract players, it works out. You know, I really like the fit with the Pacers. It wouldn't surprise me once the Lakers. I think it's unlikely. I would probably say the Clippers is more likely than that. There's been some mentions of Boston. You mentioned Phoenix, their cap situation. They could technically still make it happen, I believe. It would just need to, you know, they need to do some work. And then Minnesota would have to do a lot of work to make it happen. And then, you know, we've mentioned Orlando before. So I think there's going to be a lot of suitors interested in D'Angelo Russell. And I don't see why they wouldn't be. A 23-year-old that's an all-star level player that can improve more.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of sort of stuff surrounding sort of D'Angelo. And there was this quote that sort of stuck out to me, and it was a post on NetZalian via a Brian Lewis article, sort of saying that he wants to stay in Brooklyn, telling that the post that he wants to be a Net for life. If we're being completely honest, I enjoyed the team that we had this whole season. Russell told the post via phone from Spain. Obviously, he's been back in New York for a couple of days now. He clearly loves the city. He clearly just wants what's best for him. And it's nice to sort of see this guy still fully embracing New York and embracing. We've seen the workout videos with him in those pretty yellow shorts, getting everyone hype. A lot of people are saying, well, where's Kyrie's videos? And it's just like, all right,
it's okay, guys. Like, not everybody posts their training videos. It's not required.
Let's just chill. I mean, Caris LeVert was in the training facility saying hello to our dude, Nicholas Claxton, as well. But I mean, D'Angelo Russell as a Brooklyn, I think my thoughts still remain, and I'm changing tact towards you, Nick, in relation to Kyrie Irving, but I think I posted a tweet like a week or so ago where it's just like, it's seeming more and more likely that, you know, the Nets get Kyrie and let D'Lo go. And as much as that excites me, it also makes me incredibly sad, just as a fan, like looking at it subjectively, because you feel, we've spoken about this before, you just feel invested in a lot of these guys' growth. And I think D'Angelo Russell and Caris LeVert are the prime examples of that. For you, it's Caris LeVert. For me, it's probably a little bit more D'Angelo Russell. I don't know why stylistically certain guys speak to us, obviously Joe Harris as well, but that's a question, a discussion for another day. But D'Angelo Russell's rise and growth as a player and a person, seeing behind the scenes videos of him sort of leading the charge and, you know, the him warming to the veterans and the veterans warming to him. It's just something where I think that wherever he goes, I wish him well, and I think he's going to be successful. I don't think he's earned any sort of naysays. And if anything, the naysays that he had at the start of the season, where it's just like, well, what's D'Angelo going to do? All the sort of haters that he had, he's turned them around. And I think that's a credit to him. And whether we keep him, whether we don't, D'Angelo Russell is going to be a successful NBA player and a successful person, because he's doing his thing, and I respect it.
Yeah, I think it's funny that all the teams that are trying to get him now during the season were like, oh, D'Angelo Russell, the Nets are going to max him. That's not going to work out. Now they want their team to do it. But you mentioned, like, just enjoying him as a fan, seeing him grow is not only a player, but off the court, the leadership quality. You know, we've seen him from 21 to 23. That's a pretty big jump in your life. And like you said, I have no negative, you know, feelings towards him at all. I wish him the best, and I'm going to root for him wherever he goes.
You love doing the percentage thing. I'm going to throw it back at you. What percentage is D'Lo likely to be a Brooklyn Net next season?
Oh, man. That's tough. I'm not doing it like math-wise because I've already put percentages out for other stuff. So I'm just doing it straight up. Like, I'll give it like a 20% chance, 1 in 5 chance. Like, if the Nets strike out, or maybe if they just decide they want to do Kyrie and D'Lo or something, they'll do that. But I don't think it's very likely. What about you?
Yeah, I'll go 18%. I'm doing the prices right sort of thing. I'll go a little bit lower than you. It's purely just related to the Kyrie Irving speculation and everything that's coming out around him. So I think that he is most likely to be the Brooklyn Nets' leading point guard. And it seems more and more unlikely that they'll be keeping the two. despite, you know, early sort of rumblings. A lot can happen in 7 days, you know. Who knows where we could be looking at this entire situation? We could see Kyrie Irving completely think that, like, you know, New York could be underwater in the space of 5 years. He's like, I ain't about that life. I'm going to go to LA. But then it's the same sort of thing. And he just decides to go haul up in Portland because he just has one of his random, weird, third eye sort of thoughts. Who knows? Obviously, you know, D'Angelo Russell seems more than likely gone. But we got a question about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Nick. Do we want to address that one?
Yeah, we love Rondé. Obviously, hyphen appreciation over here.
SSV homie, the homie, has thoughts on Rondé being gone. We haven't really talked about Rondé, and I think he deserves a bit of chat on the buzz.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was actually like a crucial part for helping them get to this level. And I say that about Allen Crabbe too, because even the seasons that they didn't necessarily hit the win total they wanted, there was still progress and it helped the Nets gain more respect. And I think Rondé did a lot of things that you liked. You know, he improved his game a lot. You know, last season was a real struggle, but the year before that, he went from being a 0% offensive player to having a little post game, able to drive, get to the free throw line. We talked about his and ones that year. I love Rondé. I love what he can do. He just wasn't a really good fit in the Nets system. He probably needs to either go to a team where he can play a small ball five or play next to a stretch five.
Yeah, and I think Zach Lowe brought up that he could be a really nice pickup as sort of fallback for a lot of different teams because of his... He could be just a purely sort of defensive, a purely sort of defensive sort of specialist. You know, a guy that can switch through a lot of different positions. And I think that if he's on the right team, I think he can get something out of him. And I think that despite the fact that he doesn't have a long-term history with the Nets, I think he could have a long-term history within this league. You know, there's just guys that just fit in the NBA. Despite the fact that Rondé doesn't have a shot, he's got some offensive moves. He's got some speed. He's got some defensive acumen. So I think that, you know, he proved to us this season, you know, that obviously that Kings game and then some real masterful defensive performances. You know, if I were an opposing GM and I was looking to sort of fill out my roster, you know, sort of 6, 7, 8, 9 or 10th guy off the bench, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson would be a perfect sort of guy. A great teammate. Guys in the chat are saying one of our best dancers.
True.
it's going to be sad to see him go. That meme and that video will live on forever. It's wonderful seeing that video, by the way, turn into a meme and life of its own.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, it gives the Nets some extra pop too. And I think just touching on Rondé even more, just the energy and positive energy he brings to a team, even when he wasn't playing and all of his teammates loving him, he'll have a role in the NBA. And just even if that's just an energy guy, like he is a guy who can come off the bench, give you a spark, like you mentioned, defensively, get out in transition, okay rebounder for his size. And I think there's a couple teams that probably think they could maybe get a little bit more out of him. If he ever developed any type of reliable jump shot, his value in the league would jump up dramatically.
Yeah, exactly. James of Flatbush has jumped in. Nick, he's one to throw at you. If we keep D'Lo, do you think we could trade for Devin Booker?
No, I think the Suns, even if you threw the Suns an amazing trade, they just wouldn't trade Devin Booker because they don't know.
I think you don't need to throw them an amazing trade. I think you need to throw them Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. I just really don't have very high thoughts on their ownership and front office. That's all.
But I'm saying... Yeah, no, I agree. But I'm saying it like in the sense that like they're just not going to trade Devin Booker. Even if it made sense, they wouldn't trade him. Like they just don't know what they're doing. Like they pretty much went two ways on draft night. And I think if you're the Suns, like you have no confidence you're ever going to get a player like Devin Booker again. And he's very young. I think, what is he, still like 22? And like you just got to keep him. So I would put it highly unlikely. I would put more – I'd say the Nets have a better chance of acquiring Karl-Anthony Towns than they would Devin Booker.
Yeah, that's a fair call. I remember like during the season doing like polls on like who would you rather have as like a backcourt mate for D'Angelo Russell, Booker, or LeVert, and that almost exploded Nets Twitter, but that was a fun couple of days. But Nick, were there any other sort of rumblings and thoughts you wanted to suggest before we move on to that free agency pod that'll be dropping soon?
Yeah, I think just Chris Carter mentioned on whatever show he's on that the Nets will be one of the teams that get a meeting with Kawhi Leonard. And there was only, I believe, four teams. It was the Nets, the Knicks, the Raptors, and the Clippers, and possibly the Lakers.
I mean, it seems likely that those are the teams. I saw in a Bleacher Report notification when I woke up that, you know, superfan Nav of Toronto and some other guys are sort of saying, leave Kawhi alone. Let him do his sort of thing. Sort of like the Brittany, leave him alone sort of. I think Kawhi is going to, for me, it's more likely that he stays in Toronto. I think I'm going to be talking about, hopefully on JBT, if Nick happens to be free, the fact that, you know, his daughter has enrolled his daughter at a school in Toronto. read into that what you will. Obviously, LeBron James did that the same sort of thing with his kids when the speculation around his free agency was wild. So, I mean, you put two and two together, maybe it's likely that that happens. But at the same time, you know, there's actually one other thing that I wanted to talk about, Nick. In related to the Kyrie Irving news, I remember seeing somewhere on Twitter, it might have been Nets Daily, that Spencer Dinwiddie apparently has had a strong sort of communication ties with Kyrie Irving throughout. When you saw that, what did you necessarily think?
I found it interesting. I mean, Spencer, I think Alex Kennedy, an NBA writer, had him on for a podcast, and he mentioned he would definitely recruit guys to Brooklyn, and he was doing that. I don't know if it says anything about his relationship with D'Angelo Russell. You know, Dinwiddie's a pretty smart guy. He probably had a feeling that if Kyrie was coming, D'Angelo was leaving. But at the end of the day, you're trying to win. And if you're a player and you think he's better than D'Angelo, you're going to try to recruit him.
Yeah. And I think that maybe personality-wise, they just vibe a bit more. I mean, true. I don't think Spencer and D'Lo don't get on. I think that on the court, the fit was average at best. But it had some nice moments, but then it also had some pretty poor moments too. Who knows? Maybe that bodes well in the fact that, you know, you're talking about relationships within the locker room. You know, you have a Spencer Dinwiddie type that sort of bridges the gap to the younger blokes like Jared Allen, because Spencer Dinwiddie is that sort of nice go-between sort of guy. Whereas in Boston, was there a go-between sort of person? No. And I mean, we shouldn't necessarily be having to speak about, you know, locker room dynamics when it comes to this sort of thing. But I think that, if anything, it bodes well in the fact that Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, one of the best six men in the league, one of the best point guards coming off the bench, if not the best, and, you know, a near all-star talent, is having these sort of chats with the Kyrie Irving. I think that intellectually, you know, they're sort of both different sort of thinkers. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie, I think, is more legitimately intelligent than a guy like Kyrie Irving, than sort of that faux intelligence where it's just like, you know, you look on Instagram and watch YouTube conspiracy videos. Whereas I think Spencer, like, dominated his SATs or whatever. I have no idea what those are, by the way. I just know that, like, isn't, like, 1400, like, a good score or something?
Yeah, they, like, change the scoring around on them, too, once in a while, like, every couple of years. So, yeah, he's smart. I think what the Nets refer to him as, like, Google or something, because he knows the answer to everything. But I found that interesting. And then you would assume, just because Kyrie signed with Roc Nation, LeVert's part of Roc Nation, they had a conversation at some point. So if he's coming in, he already has a connection with Kyrie. I mean, with Dinwiddie and LeVert, you know, two of the best players on the team, I think that only bodes well. And a lot of guys that are going to be coming in, like we're talking about on the free agency pod, the Nets are going to lose probably a lot of players. So there's going to be some turnaround, and there's a chance they could bring in guys that have already had a past relationship with Kyrie, or somebody they know get along well with him, to kind of help keep the locker room nice.
And in that sense, Nick, in terms of sort of creating that sort of cap space, because they're still a little bit away from offering those two super maxes. Obviously, Durant, if he were to sign, would get 38%, I believe. And I believe Kyrie would get about 34 or 35%. There was the most despondent trade rumor I have ever seen in the history of Twitter going around, the fact that we should trade Joe Harris. I get it. I was having conversations and I understand it. In terms of getting another asset back, and a lot of teams would want him, but we can't trade Joe Harris, can we, Nick?
I honestly think it would be kind of a poor move, because Joe Harris is a perfect player to complement an elite player like Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant, because of the spacing he provides. The only way, like, I would be more open to, because the money amount that they need to get to is, like, I want to say, like, 1.2 or 1.3 million. Obviously, we haven't seen him play yet, but I'd rather move Musa in this situation and keep Joe Harris. Obviously, the scare with Joe Harris is he's a free agent after the season. You might not be able to retain him. So maybe you try to get an asset, but you definitely need shooting in this offense. So it'd be pretty big to trade your best shooter on the team just to get some extra cap space. But if they did trade Joe Harris, they'd open up cap space to sign KD and Kyrie, and then even have a little money left over to sign possibly another role player.
Yeah, unless you are getting JJ Redick in the offseason, which, you know, has been linked to the Brooklyn Nets. Obviously, JJ Redick and Kyrie Irving do have an established relationship with being the Duke alumni. They've appeared, I believe Kyrie's appeared on his pod as well. So unless we were to get JJ ready for a season and go all in on sort of contending, then keep Joe. But I would love to keep both of those, by the way. You would have two of the best three-point shooters of the past couple of years. And I mean, I get the sort of losing Joe Harris in free agency or whatever, but at the same time, I don't necessarily think that that's going to be the case, because, yes, another team might throw a little bit of money at him, but Joe Harris has an established relationship with the franchise, and yes, obviously it could go a D'Lo sort of way where it's just like we let him go because we get JJ Redick and Danny Green. But if we were to get him and keep him, I think he would take unders to stay with the Brooklyn Nets at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue he took unders the first contract he signed because I think there was rumblings that teams offered him more and he decided to stay with the Nets. And obviously, things are going really well for him. And if you ever listen to Joe Harris on a podcast, I think he was on Zach Lowe's this year, you know, he seems to really like Brooklyn, really like living in the city.
Yeah, and I mean, who wouldn't? And who wouldn't want to, you know, keep Joey Buckets around? But I think the final thing we should touch on a little bit, Nick, is the Tobias Harris sort of been like the rumor upon the top of the other rumors that were sort of spoken about.
Yeah, and that was that if the Nets don't get Kyrie and KD, they're going to look to get Kyrie and Tobias Harris. Obviously, you'd probably slip Kawhi in there, but the Nets probably aren't super confident getting Kawhi, so maybe this is the backup plan. You know, we talked about it. We've never really been opposed of acquiring Tobias Harris. It's more so how much money are you acquiring him for?
Exactly. You can't offer him a four-year max. I don't think – and I mean, if you're Philadelphia, I think he is more valuable to you than he would be to a Brooklyn Nets organization. And it seems silly to say that because Tobias Harris on the sort of draft show that he was sort of doing with the Yahoo Sports was sort of saying, you know, he's prioritized more than anything how a team sort of plays, ball moving around, all that sort of thing. And everyone was just like, this seems a lot like the Brooklyn Nets. And it does. It was essentially just like he's saying, I want to be on the Brooklyn Nets in a really sort of underground sort of fashion. But I agree. I think Tobias Harris for the right number would be sensational. If we were to get him for like 4 years, $100 million or something like that, I would be like, oh boy, oh boy. I'd be jumping for joy because I think if you get him for the right number, it almost works as good as getting Kevin Durant for the max number because you weigh all those sort of things up because I think money and cap situation has a real sort of effect on how you build the team going forward, how you get other pieces in. And I mean, yes, you would love to have Kyrie and KD, but there's not a lot of wiggle room and flexibility to grow as a team beyond those two sort of guys. It's sort of embedded within them. And if you had Tobias Harris on a decent sort of deal, I mean, the guy, I don't know if he loves going to different teams, but he has been on a lot of other teams and he's incredibly effective in his role. And he'd be obviously incredibly effective on whatever team he would especially be, but especially on the Brooklyn Nets. I think he'd be an insane sort of guy.
And you mentioned, you know, depending on the number amount of you, it's just hypothetically the $100 million 4 years. And you keep him in a locked-in $25 million for the next 4 years. That's really good because the cap's going to continue to ascend. It might only be a million or two per year. But then also you have another $11 million possibly left in cap space that you could spend if you get to that max number because obviously 32 plus 25, you're only at 57, and the max space they can get is 68. So then, boom, you've got $11 million. You get a good player for $11 million. And then you're still going to have the room exception, which you could probably sign a bench player with. So, I mean, there's a possibility, and someone might argue that you could build a better team that way. It'd be interesting. Obviously, the Tobias thing is all about the number. And then also, I think if you get Tobias, you got to view him as your third option. Then you're praying that maybe Caris LeVert becomes your second option because I just don't think Tobias Harris is aggressive enough to be a number two or one option on a team.
No, I don't think he is either. I think it depends on his fit, but obviously in Los Angeles, people look too much to recent history into his sort of postseason semi-woes. He wasn't great. He was pretty average. Let's put it that way.
He was quiet. That's what it was.
Yeah, he was quiet, but he was awesome in Los Angeles and he was awesome in all these other ventures and all these other teams. So I think he'd be a great regular season player and he hasn't had the chance to necessarily prove himself as a better sort of piece within a system that fits him better, which I think Brooklyn would be a better basketball situation for him. But a better money situation for him and a better winning situation would probably be the Sixers. I think they're going to be one of the top teams. But a final question. We can't not address D-Rock. He's jumped into the questions, jumped into the chat. Question for the hosts. What is the absolute best case scenario for us? And what's the most realistic and plausible? It's a really good one.
Yeah, it is. And D-Rock, I just sent out your t-shirt today. So hopefully you get that this week. Yeah, now you'll be rocking the Brooklyn.
Flash off the glass.
Yes. I mean, if I'm being, a little bit impatient, I think the best case scenario is signing Kyrie Irving and Kawhi Leonard. You know, Kawhi's healthy. The East is still pretty open. You know, then maybe you're getting some bench guys to sign with some of the money you have. Nets also have that $15 million trade exception, which they got in the Taurean Prince deal. So there's a real possibility they could bring in another player too. I think you get Kyrie and Kawhi, and then you bring in one or two different role guys. Now you still have Spencer Dinwiddie, you still have Caris LeVert, you still have Joe Harris, you still have Jared Allen, you still have Rodion, you still have Taurean Prince, you have Nick Claxton, who we talked about yesterday. think you're in really good position, then you just fill it out with some solid winners. I think that's best case. The Nets are contending for an NBA championship next season.
Yeah, for me, I agree. I think it's Kyrie, Kawhi, and Danny Green / JJ Redick, one of those really, really good sort of guys, role players that can perform in the postseason. The most realistic and plausible seems to me that it's Kyrie Irving and pieces. Though it's growing more and more realistic that we do get Kevin Durant as well. So, you know, by the time we do another buzz, this could be the most realistic situation is that we get those two. But it seems to me the most realistic is Kyrie and guys around it. D'Angelo Russell might have to unfortunately leave. But there's so many different situations that it's so hard to analyze what is the most realistic. It's a lot easier to analyze what's the best case and worst case. But you can't necessarily predict realistic and realism in this crazy, nutty league.
And a player could come available that we do not know is going to become available. That's the one thing I always think about is guys go on the block that you never expect to be on the block, or all of a sudden it's like, all right, we're going to make this move, or a move that you didn't really think made sense, or maybe your team's going all in. Maybe the Nets get two stars, and then they use that trade exception, pair it with some future picks, and some of the guys they have on the roster, they add a third star. Like, there's a lot of scenarios. We could never cover anything unless we stayed on for 24 hours straight. I even think the best realistic scenario seems like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. That seems like the most realistic one. Kawhi seems like how Kevin Durant seemed earlier in the year because of obviously winning in Toronto and then the ties to the Clippers. But the Nets have been hanging around that conversation long enough where you have to have a little type of hope.
Yeah, and I think that it can change on a whim. And it's such a really interesting scenario to sort of be in as a Brooklyn Nets fan and a Brooklyn Nets podcaster. But it's just so many different scenarios. So thanks to every single person who's jumped into the chat, asked questions and had some discussions. We could do this for a long time, but it's Saturday night and Nick better give some time to his girlfriend or he ain't going to have a fiance no more.
Yeah, I do want to get one more thing. So I just wanted to get in the quote from Sean Marks. I definitely don't think it's skipping steps. You have a good group of young guys coming up that have proved the league that they're NBA players. This was a question that Marks received at the draft press conference. What did you think about this, Jack? Because it's a different feel than some of the responses we've heard from him in the past.
Marks has something up his sleeve. Shawnee boy, S&M has something up his sleeve.
Shawnee boy, I love that. Put that on a t-shirt.
You got like Sean Marks with a thumbs up or something. He's got something up his sleeve. I mean, Flatbush and Atlantic hit us up because we need to get some money for that one. But yeah, it seems to me that yes, I think that as a general manager and as any sort of NBA higher up, you need to be open to whatever the market is dictating, whatever the players are available, and you need to do every single way to make your team better. We're not the Phoenix Suns, and we're not going to do everything to make our team worse and to feed the ego of our owner. Back in the day, maybe that would have been the case when Mikhail Prokhorov had just bought the team. But for now, it's Sean Marks' team as a front office organization, and he's going to do everything to make it better. Be through mini trades in the draft, selecting guys in the draft, free agency, trading away contracts, getting in other assets. The Brooklyn Nets are going to be better next season. How much better? Time will tell. What will land in free agency? Sean Marks is obviously going to remain cryptic because he doesn't want to get any tampering fine and he's not Magic Johnson. But we will see how it goes. It will be a fascinating offseason and a fascinating 7 or 8 days. And the buzz is going to be popping when free agency is kicking off.
Yeah, we'll be dropping plenty of shows. And obviously, there was a quote from Brian Lewis piece for the New York Post that it's going to be a transformational offseason. So obviously, something up his sleeve. Like Jack said, we appreciate everybody listening, viewing on YouTube, dropping the questions and comments. Really appreciate it. We'll drop as many shows as we can. Like we said, free agency preview dropping midweek. As always, Jack, a pleasure. Check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, Dash Radio, Google Play, and YouTube.